Coming up this week on the Vacationland Podcast, Life Finds a Way and Universal announces the closure of a popular attraction. Spooky Fun comes to an end at Disneyland. SeaWorld debuts two new experiences this summer that have absolutely nothing to do with animals. And the end of some downtown Disney favorites may be nearer than you think. Plus, it's time for our first ever dining review, and the restaurant that we're reviewing has less than a month to live. So, from an undisclosed location near the Pacific Ocean, this is the Vacationland Podcast. This is the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast for the week of May 21st, 2018. Visit our travel partner, Magical Vacation Planner by Caris, for help planning your next vacation getaway to any of the following: Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Disney Cruise Line, Adventures by Disney, and Alani, Universal Studios Orlando, and Royal Caribbean, Princess, Carnival Cruises, and more. Get your free consultation by visiting Magical Vacation Planner by Caris on Facebook or by visiting magicalvacationplanner.com/staff/Caris, CARISS-Milano, MILANO. Well, hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Vacationland Podcast, a discussion of the latest news, reviews, and history from Universal Studios Hollywood, Knott's Berry Farm, the Disneyland Resort, and more. All brought to you by our team of theme park fans and experts. I am Chris Ramirez, the host and executive producer of Vacationland, and this week I am joined by photographer and Universal Studios reporter Aaron Owens. Welcome back, Aaron.
Thank you so much.
And from our vlog series, You Know Her, You Love Her, ladies and gentlemen, please say hello to Karen Fan. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Chris. Hello, Aaron. I feel like I should be clapping after everything, you know, and making jazz hands.
We'll fix it in post. That's all. We'll fix it in post. So this is, welcome back, everybody. I know it's been a while since we've had a show. So a couple of things that I wanted to cover. We're going to be calling our welcome back segment, everybody has a different name for it, you know, the first 5-10 minutes of the show. So we're going to be, it's a new name for an old segment. So from here on out, we're going to be calling our welcome back segment. This is going to be called Main Entrance. And I just figured, like, it's theme park related. You just got your picture taken. So this is going to be Main Entrance for this show. Covering everything. So Brandis and, associate producer John and alternate John are all off this weekend. We are recording this the Saturday before the Memorial Day holiday. And, everybody's got a little bit of something planned. So Erin, came in this weekend and she was nice enough to join us. And we also brought in Karen, who was, nice enough to join us, record a show with us. We wanted to get something up. The reason we wanted to get something up is because, we had no show for the weekend of Mother's Day, because it's Mother's Day and I couldn't get anybody to come down here, and understandably so. Last week we had a kind of a technical failure, so we were going to record a show last week and we didn't get a chance to record a show last week because of a technical glitch, and so this week I didn't want one more week to go by without recording a show, because we got some exciting things coming up and planned for the show. And we wanted to get something recorded and up, and Aaron and Karen were available this weekend, and so here we are. So we are all out of Johns, and we are short one Brandis, but we are hoped to all be in the studio again in 2 weeks for our next show. Also, I wanted to mention that if you were follow us on Facebook, you may have noticed a name change. We are now known as the Vacationland Theme Park Podcast, and we'll be referring to us as so. I just wanted to make it a little easier for us to be found on things like iTunes and for us to be searched. And Vacationland, I love the name, but I don't think it reflected quite as easily as much as I thought it was going to. What it is exactly that we do. So just make note of that. Nothing's going to change in there as far as content goes. We just have a new name, so it makes it easier to find and lets people know what we do. And finally, so we're going to introduce you to our friend Karen. Hi, Karen.
Hello, Chris.
You can lean a little bit closer into the mic there. There we go.
I'm feeling a little trepidatious, but hello.
It's fine. So you have done a couple of vlogs with us so far, or one vlog with
us. I think I've only done the one, you've snuck me into some other ones that I didn't know of.
So Karen and her sister joined me on our, if you've seen it, our Lunar, no, not in the Lunar New Year.
We missed that one.
Yeah, DCA Food and Wine is the one that we did. And
if anybody would like to subsidize Karen for a annual pass so Karen could do more vlogs with Chris, that would be greatly appreciated.
Yeah, that DCA Food and Wine Fest video that we did, that ended up, that was fun. That was super fun.
And that was filling.
Did you get a chance? You don't have your Disney pass anymore.
I don't have a Disneyland pass anymore. I just have the Magic Mountain and Universal Studios.
Yeah. So the DCA Food and Wine Fest was a lot of fun, and it was very filling, and we had some great fun out there.
It was better than I expected it to be. I'll be honest. It was my first one here in California, but it was a lot better than I was expecting. So I think I was expecting something a little more slapdash, based on some of the stuff I had heard about the first one. Was maybe it wasn't worth it. But I was pleasantly surprised that this one seemed very, very similar to the Florida one.
Yeah. The first year that they had the Food and Wine Fest at California Adventure was, they did have the booze and they did have all of that stuff, but they were still getting their footing. They were still getting, I think, used to the format of a Food and Wine Festival at Disney. There's still some things that aren't perfect. There's still some things that, like, keeping food stocked at your Food and Wine Festival, that they still can't seem to figure out. But other than that, I mean, the food itself that we had, I think was
mostly
pretty
good.
Yeah.
Mostly good.
And Karen has,
Karen was not a fan of the strawberry stand.
Yeah, the strawberry stand
The strawberry stand. I know some people gave some great reviews to that Frushi, but it was a hot mess, in my opinion.
Oh. Yeah. It was, we call it the Frushito because it was, it was like rice wrapped in strawberries, and
it didn't work. I'm sure it may have worked elsewhere, or it was a great concept, but in translation, it did not work for any of us.
So, if you want to go and check that out and see some of what we thought about the DCA Food and Wine Festival, go on to YouTube. We'll talk about a little bit later where to find our YouTube videos. But, so Karen, you've got an interesting connection to the parks and, two particular parks. Tell us a little bit about our thing here is that we are theme park fans and experts. We've all done an intro segment at one point. And, so why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and, your backgrounds with theme parks?
Okay, well, hello, I'm Karen Fan, I'm currently marketing manager at the Asian Pacific Community Fund. There's a plug for work. If you guys ever want to donate to a nonprofit, we are a great one, and you don't have to be Asian to do it.
That should be your tagline. Like, that should be an all.
You don't have to be Asian to do it. Forget invest in people. I started out as a annual pass holder to Disneyland way back when premium passports were still affordable and included parking and zero blackout dates. And then eventually I decided that it would be fun to work for Disneyland. So I did for a really long time, it feels like.
And you were there. Yeah. And you and I were both there at the same time.
I came in a little before you, I think. About 6 months to a year, maybe.
Probably
because
I started there. I started working at the park in late 1999. Or mid sort of spring break 1999. So I think we discovered that you came in probably a little bit before I did.
I did. I remember coming in, I think maybe 6 months or so before you, maybe a year. I can't remember. I'll be honest. I can't even remember when I started working there. It seemed like a really, really long time. I met some really great friends there, but, it was a really long time.
Tell us where you worked at when you were at the park.
So I actually hired in, and I was supposed to work in Fantasyland for the Classics and Small World, and then they had a problem finding a trainer for me, so I got to work at the Haunted Mansion. Yay!
That sounds like fun.
It's actually really nice because when I hired in, we had to go through these group interviews. And then at the end of it, she asked me, she's like, so I see that you put a couple of options that you'd like to work for, and we're not hiring for the hotel and you can't hire in to guest relations, but I think you'd do really great in both attractions and store. So where should you work? And so I was like, oh, I guess I'll take attractions because I think it'd be fun.
Yeah, you made the right call there, by the way.
I was later told it was because I had attraction hair. I don't know what that meant.
Interesting. I wonder if I had attraction hair. looked a lot like this. So,
so then I ended up getting to work at Haunted Mansion, which made me the envy of everybody in my training class. And
Haunted Mansion is one of those attractions where, you know, it's a new hire thing. You can get hired, you know, into Haunted Mansion, but it's also one of those like classic attractions that, like, oh, you work at Haunted Mansion. Like it's different than, oh, you work at Dumbo. Like it's,
yeah,
you know,
I think it was the costumes. I really think it was the costumes and those bats we had on our heads. So people were always like, oh my gosh, you get to wear the outfit. I think the only other attraction that really you felt that way was if you worked for Pirates. People were like, oh my God, you work for Pirates. You get to wear the cool outfit and the corsets.
I love I like the Columbia outfit. I always wanted to wear that.
I will be honest. The Columbia outfit is not very flattering on me. So, really the only flattering costumes ever on me were Mansion and, Pirates, which unfortunately I didn't get to work. But I did end up learning Splash and, also Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, which even though you might think it is really boring is actually really cool.
It's one of my favorite attractions actually as an adult.
Yeah. It's and those blue satin shirts that they wear there. Those are something else.
We did. We had a lot of people who liked to pet us on the arm to feel up our blue silk shirts.
Yeah. So, and then, so you left.
I did leave the park. Yeah. But I actually moved over to the Walt Disney Travel Company, and I was also part of Disney's Volunteers Leadership Council, where we did good things and we handed out money to deserving organizations.
Yeah, and Disney does contribute a lot of money to surrounding nonprofits and charities, and they do a lot of good.
We also
work
provided
that.
A lot of manpower, a lot of organization. Yeah. So, if they were doing an event and they didn't have enough people, it was one of the things they could let us know, like, "Hey, we're doing an event. We're hoping to get people for volunteers." And so it was part of our job to get out there and volunteer and advertise it to our own cast members and get people to volunteer along with us for the event. So if you've ever done the Chalk Walk, those volunteers are all Disney Leadership Council found. Just want to point that out.
Yeah, that's a great – I know of a couple of friends that even now as non-cast – that started out as cast members, but as non-cast members, they do the Chalk Walk, and that's a great organization to go out there and, you know, volunteer your time for and do that. That's great. So then you left that capacity and then you went,
I did.
Somewhere
I
very
left
far
the
away.
Walt Disney Travel Company and I went off to China. So I was in China for a while, sailing up and down the Yangtze River. And, eventually I landed in Shanghai and there were a lot of rumors.
Literally sailing up and down the Yangtze River.
I literally sailed up. My sister loved, you guys may not know this, so I'm going to point this out, but I'm Asian. And, so every time I came back to the States, my sister would be like, "Look, there's my sister. She's fresh off the boat." She thought it was hilarious. So every time, and she'd be like, "'Cause literally you just got off a boat, get it?" But I did end up in Shanghai, and a lot of rumors were going around that Disney was going to open up in Shanghai. And lo and behold, they did. And lo and behold, I ended up working for Shanghai Disney for a little while.
That's busy. What was that like?
It was kind of crazy. It was really kind of crazy. You had a mixture of local Chinese and then foreigners from kind of all over. Some had experience within other areas of Disney or at Disneyland or Disney Paris, and some, you know, had attraction experience from elsewhere, other theme parks. So it was kind of interesting. And I will be honest, our floor, at the time, the office was almost split. So it was kind of like all the Westerners were on one side of the building and then all the local Asians were on the other side of the building.
And what was your job there?
I was the hiring manager for the front line, which meant that I would be in charge of hiring all of the people that you would interact with on a day-to-day basis. So the custodial people, the attractions people, security guards, the line cooks, all of that stuff.
And then you left and now you work for a nonprofit now.
I do. And then I left because I wanted to come home and now I'm back in the States.
How long have you been back?
Ooh, I don't know. Like maybe 4 years?
Okay.
5 years? Something? I don't know. Time slips away from me.
All right. Well, that's great. Well, thanks for sharing that with us. And now kind of our audience knows who you are. And we're going to be going out to the Disneyland Resort tomorrow. And so, we're going to go to Splitsville and sorry, not tomorrow, on the Monday holiday, but it doesn't matter because the video is going to go up later anyway.
So. It's a big surprise for me because I don't know what we're doing.
I think we're going to go to Splitsville and we're going to probably do a dining review there. Maybe go bowling a little bit and, some of the things in downtown Disney we're going to talk about because there was some sort of rumors and news about that over the weekend.
I'm pretty sure you guys are only taking me to Splitsville because I am like the worst bowler ever.
Oh no, we're going to make you bowl.
I know. That's why I feel like you guys are just taking me because I'm the worst bowler. So I will make all the rest of you guys look awesome.
That's why we're going to Splitsville. Okay. No, look forward to that. And I'll tell you where to find those videos, later on in the show. So Erin, how have you been?
I'm doing great. It's been really busy the past several months. Yeah. So that's what I get for being in the film industry.
Yeah. You get to go out to Orlando.
I did get to go out to Orlando in the end of February. One of my best friends actually works at Walt Disney World, so I'm able to stay with him at his place and he can drive me into the parks and get me into those parks for free. So it's quite nice and a luxury of just all I have to pay for is my meals. And which I ate a lot of.
You don't have to pay for parking or make reservations 90 days out in advance.
He was able to, you know, he'd be like, oh, just tell me what rides you want fast passes for and I'll try to get them for you. I was like, all right.
I want to travel with her from now on. Can we bring her on all of our trips?
We've met, Erin and I have met out at the, when we've been at Disney World in the,
several years ago we did the Food and Wine Festival.
Yeah.
We, around the same time.
Yeah. And so we were out, we kind of hung out for a day.
You know, I'll be back in Florida in February if you want to come along.
I will totally go. I'm always okay with going back.
Karen is our budget-minded traveler. She loves a good deal. So.
I do. I do love a good
nothing
deal.
Nothing wrong with that.
And you got to go on the new, well, the new.
The new new.
The new new, it was Incredible Hulk coaster.
Yes.
How was that?
It was fine. I mean, I honestly, I've only ever been on the Incredible Hulk twice in my life, which was back in February, and the other time was back in 2011 after I graduated college, and that was my first trip out to Orlando to go to Islands of Adventure and Walt Disney World. And so I have like vague memories of what the original quote unquote Incredible Hulk was like. I remember the launching part of it from the original part where you were just kind of sitting there and then you hear like chaos and then you just hear the Hulk get angry and then you start to go through the lift hill at that launch point. However, now they still have the launch, but they don't have all that build up to it. They took that out. So it's like now on the outside. So all the people who are just kind of walking around the park, you hear the Hulk do his like scream as the train is being launched out of the lift hill. So that's when you hear that point, which is kind of cool, you know, to hear that out there. But it's like, well, it makes more sense for the person on the ride to hear this, not the people off the ride.
Yeah, like they're not, you know, they're not selling tickets to it or something. You know, you're not trying to get people are already in the park.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not trying to get people in.
I was like,
what
happened to the show part, like in this? So that was a little disappointing, in my opinion, because I think that's what sold that whole moment. And it's just, you're just kind of there and there's some cool, you know, updated lights that are now LED lights as opposed to whatever they were before. So, but you know, it's still a roller coaster, but I miss, Dueling Dragons or Dragon Challenge, what it was called.
Yeah,
for
that was a great ride. That was a lot of fun.
I could ride that all day long and still be happy.
Yeah, they still have not announced what they're going to be replacing that roller coaster with, and there's a lot of speculation out there, but nobody really has heard anything. He's going to let it be a pile of dirt for a while till Star Wars Land opens, and then they come up with something better.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you, Erin. Thank you, Karen. That is Main Entrance for now, and now it's time to go park hopping.
To those of you who have just joined us, welcome aboard the Disneyland monorail.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
Welcome to Knott's Berry Tales. You are approaching a moving ramp. When the ride operator asks you to board your car, please look down and step carefully onto the ramp. Thank you, and enjoy your ride through Knott's Berry Tales.
All right, and we're going to kick off park hopping. Aaron and I are going to split the news today. And Aaron, what's going on at Jurassic Park at Universal Studios Hollywood?
Time, the ever-flowing river. Come with us now to a time before man, when the river flowed through a newborn world, and giants walked the earth. Welcome to Jurassic Park.
Well, I'll tell you.
Aaron has a lot of feelings about this, by the way.
Aaron looks like she's about to cry, actually.
So sad. Anyway, well, for me it is. So Jurassic Park the Ride at Universal Studios Hollywood is heading for extinction, sadly. The water thrill ride featuring gigantic animatronic dinosaurs will close its doors for good after 22 years on September 3rd. The theme park announced this on May 10th, 2018. So excavation will begin for a new thrill ride based on Universal Studios' newest dinosaur franchise, Jurassic World Ride, opening in 2019. So Jurassic Park the Ride, which began its Hollywood reign in 1996, 3 years after Steven Spielberg's blockbuster film. The ride was researched and built as the film was still in its production phase and opened at Universal Studios Hollywood on June 21st, 1996. Duplicates of the ride have since been built at Universal's Islands of Adventure, Universal Studios Japan, under Jurassic Park River Adventure. A River Rapids ride version of the attraction opened at Universal Studios Singapore in 2010. The technologically cutting-edge attraction featured new principles of hydraulic physics, mechanics, and robotics from the ride features dinosaurs as big as 5 stories high, including a Stegosaurus, I'm not going to even try the other ones, Velociraptors, and of course, our favorite, the T-Rex. Park operators are counting on fans to give a final farewell in the last days, launching a countdown to the extinction campaign, partnership of scientists, paleontologists, and aerospace engineers. The new ride will pay homage to Jurassic Park and will reimagine the film franchise for theme park guests. The Jurassic Cove restaurant and Jurassic Outfitters retail store also will close with the attraction and reopen with a new experience in 2019. Details of the Jurassic World ride are being kept under wraps, but a press release describes the plans as epic, featuring never-before-seen dinosaurs, enhanced storytelling, lush scenic design, an entirely new color scheme, and uncompromised state-of-the-art technology.
Those are their words, by the way, not ours, as well as the going extinct.
Let's see how well they maintain that technology. It's the better question.
All right, so we've all been on this ride, correct?
We have.
Yes, yeah. I have. So, many obviously have.
I love Jurassic Park the Ride. I love all of the little in-jokes. I love the two little dinosaurs fighting over the Mickey ears. Mm-hmm. Aaron, what are your feelings on this change?
Well, now, granted, I understand, you know, Universal Studios Hollywood is a small park. It doesn't have a whole lot of space to be like, oh, I'm going to add new attractions. It's more like they usually have to revamp their old attractions. Totally understandable.
I'm still mad about E.T., by the way.
Yes and no for me. For Jurassic Park, I mean, as long as it's still, you know, a kind of log flume, river, rapids, as long as it still includes that giant drop at the end, I guess I'll still be happy. But, you know, it's going to be sad to see it go. I hope they kind of keep the same type of ideas with the moments, like having the T-Rex come out at you before you make your final drop, which is obviously what everyone probably remembers from that ride who's ever been on it.
Right. And so from some of the speculation that I've heard is that there's going to be like screens added like every other Universal attraction inside the ride. And it's going to have a lot to do with the Indominus Rex, that was in the Lost World. I mean, they're keeping the drop, obviously. I don't think a lot's going to change, but I love the ride. I love the ride in its current state as I love Jurassic Park. It is one of my favorite movies. That ride was, you know, we use the word immersive a lot when we talk about theme park experiences.
But that one definitely
One definitely made you feel like this could have been, you know, if it was real, it could have been an attraction in the real Jurassic Park. You know, had it not, you know, been overrun by dinosaurs and everybody died and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But, I really enjoy it. I understand, again, you're right. I understand the change, the need for change, the need to, update these things. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. We just talked last show about the fact that they closed the I Love Lucy tribute to put in a,
the Hello Kitty
thing. And,
yes.
You know, that.
Actually, I heard you guys talk about that on the show and I was like, yeah, I went in there. Fine.
Yeah. But you know, then, you know, they replaced Backdraft with Transformers and I, you know, they're going to be opening up new space on the lower lot for new attractions. You know, I feel I'm going to wait and see. I'm going to adopt the wait and see attitude. Some of those effects, you are correct, have not been very well maintained. And it's amazing to hear what year did that ride open? It's 1996.
Yeah.
It's been 22 years since it opened. Which actually,
I mean, that T-Rex is still really impressive.
Yeah. And no, and it's actually, it's, that's
so it's the only thing that they maintain is that right. T-Rex. Actually, so, at this point, that is literally the only thing they maintain.
Some of them work, some of them don't. That big thing that comes out of the water.
That they do that. I mean, of course, they replaced it from what it used to be.
What did it used to be?
I mean, they just replaced like probably the mechanics of it.
Right.
It used to be like, I think an entire dinosaur. Now you can tell it's
just the
more needs to be, come up and better technology. They just know how to use it. So
my question is, they made a comment about new theming and are they going to cover the parking structure that you can see as you come over the hill? That's going to be my big question about theming.
I like that you guys are so into this. And when I first heard this, my only thing was, oh, is this like where they're going to insert Chris Pratt into every other scene like they do at Disneyland? Like that was my big thought.
Yeah. Animatronic.
Everybody's like, oh, the dinosaur. And I mean, I love dinosaurs. Come over this way. Okay. Chris can attest.
Karen does
love dinosaurs.
It's true.
But my first thought was just, oh, am I going to see Chris Pratt in like every other scene? But everybody here is all like, oh, you know, the animatronics, and are we going to cover the parking lot? And I feel like maybe I wasn't focusing on the right thing.
I mean, if the option is no Chris Pratt or Chris, I don't know. But so
Chris Pratt.
So,
well, yeah. My other thing of why I was sad about this is because, like you said, having screens and just media that you're watching is my fear that it's just, they'd be like, oh, look, pretty thing. I'm like, you can make it.
Like Chris Pratt.
Whatever works.
Chris, call me.
If you look at video of the one from Universal Studios Florida, this is what worries me about the one that we have, our version here. We looked at video of both. We kind of did a side-by-side comparison. And
they are different.
They are different. And
they're,
I think,
very different.
The only thing we
have is the drop and the dinosaur.
Yeah. That's so it. Here, everyone's like, different. There's actual, like, once you get kind of, it's, theirs is longer, but I think once you
ours
get,
is
ours is better. It's okay to say ours is better. Ours has that's the other thing that never works is the Jeep dropping off of the wall.
Which I get. It's, that's a lot of mechanics of it going down every, like, how many,
probably, probably every 18 seconds.
And then go
or something.
All the way back up and then drop down and then go all the way. Like, it's just constant all day long.
Yeah.
Pretty much 35,
so I can, yeah,
65 days of the year.
Again, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But once you get inside, you know, you have the dinosaurs dropping in from the top and you have the dinosaurs coming in from the side and you have the first T-Rex that you see that comes down from the ceiling. And so my big fear in this whole thing is going to be that we're going to just see, again, screens and media, and it's going to be, you know, it's going to be the Fast and the Furious dinosaur version.
Yeah.
No. I have actually never seen the Fast and the Furious.
You never seen the movie?
I've seen the movies, but I've never done it because every time I've gone through the studio tour, the Fast and the Furious has been broken down. So I've never finished.
It's interesting.
I've never finished going through that. So I don't know what it looks like.
I'm curious to see what it's going to – we're going to Universal Studios Orlando in December. So I'm curious to see how theirs – I mean, it's obviously it's the same movie, but it's not part of the tram tour because they don't have a tram tour. Like, you get on a party bus. Anyways, it's going to be interesting to see.
I agree. But I have to comment, though, like when I was there in Orlando in February – I was walking by the area where it's going to be Fast and the Furious Supercharged, and these two guys were, you know, in their late 30s, were so excited. They were so excited. Oh my gosh.
I can't wait.
I'm like, it's really not. I mean,
were they wearing their hats backwards also?
No. I mean, they didn't get
were their
quite
pants
there.
Falling off their butts?
I'm sure if you looked at them like 10 years ago, I'm sure that was the case. But yeah, so I was just like, it's okay. I mean, it's just, it's just 3D media all around you.
Yeah. Did you go on it? Did you go on that one in Florida?
What?
The Fast and the Furious?
It's not open yet.
It's not open yet.
Okay. No, it wasn't open yet. Or I don't know.
Yeah, it's open. It's open
now. When I was there, it wasn't open yet. Okay. So if it is open now, then maybe it is. But, I've done, you know, the one on the tram plenty of times that I don't think I would need to.
Yeah.
I guess
the
same thing.
The big difference with that one is that it's not 3D, and thank God they're seem to be going away from that 3D stuff and the rides, because, yeah. All right. So moving on, we're going to go on to our next story, and we have seen the last of the bats at Disneyland.
Oh, that's kind of sad.
Yeah. Bats Weekend flies away at Disneyland. So according to an article in the OC Register, a popular unofficial Disneyland event that annually attracts thousands of members of the goth lifestyle will be scaled back and have most events elements eliminated after the final event that was held on May 6th, its founder says. Bats Day began 20 years ago as a simple meetup at Disneyland Park of like-minded goth fans, but grew in spooky popularity over the decades to include a full-fledged convention with hotel lodging, private dinner, concert, gala, marketplace, and photos on the steps of Disneyland's Haunted Mansion. Disneyland was filled with steampunk, goth, and vintage style over the weekend as guests gathered for the annual Bats Day event. An edgier version of Dapper Day, the unofficial event invites visitors to dress up in their finest dark clothing for a day at the park. By organizer estimates, 7,000 people attended last year, including hardcore goths and people who simply enjoyed the fashion. "We just can't afford to do it anymore," event founder Noah Korda said. "The tax laws have changed." Korda, 47, a designer from Van Nuys, canceled all the elements of this year's weekend except for a Bats Day meetup at the park on Sunday, May 6th. And at 7 p.m., the final wake on Saturday at the Hyatt Regency Orange County for those who want to say goodbye. "We do this out of the kindness of our hearts," Korda said about the annual event. "Any money we make gets rolled into the next year." A statement on the Bats Fun Day in the park website read in part, "Due to the new 2018 tax plan, the struggling economy, and ever-rising costs, we can no longer have Bats Day in the fun park on the grand scale that it has had for the past 15 years. What most people don't realize is that Bats Day is a labor of love. We don't make money on it. Bats Day has never had any corporate funding or sponsorship either. It is an event we do for the community." That is a long time. I didn't even realize it was something that was going on that long. 15 years.
So Karen and I had this discussion. So, and that's the answer to that. It's been 15 years. Since
I thought it was 20.
Well, since that 20, and I think the 20 was just the original meetup in the park, and the 15 is with the convention and the
maybe
and
more that official, would explain why. The more official unofficial version.
Yeah. Well, because I'll be honest, I don't have much of a recollection of them. Like, I remember Red Shirt Day, I remember Dapper Day from my time working in the park, but I was thinking back and I really couldn't remember Bats Day. I mean, I am sorry to hear that this is no longer a thing, and I completely understand because, and not to plug work, but my nonprofit, we don't do like service providing. So, we've recently gotten a lot more donors because what we do a lot of is this thing called donor advice funds. And the reason we've been getting a lot of people coming in is because of the tax Trump, you know, restructuring. You can't really write off a lot of the stuff that you used to be able to now. So people now donate to us in a larger chunk, but, you know, give the money to us, you know, like in a certain timeline. So you don't have to give it all up front. So when I read that, I was like, oh yeah, that really makes sense. You know, that really makes sense because all those tax cuts have been going away and it's a lot harder for everyday people. And also from what I can gather, they were doing a lot of photo ops. So they were taking them in front of the camera, or in front of the castle.
I think what is ultimately spelled the end of this event is Disney, because there were several hundred people in attendance.
It's expensive.
It's a lot like, you know, Dapper Day. Dapper Day did the same thing. They had to scale their events back because I think what Disney was now, Disney with Dapper Day has gone, you know, full into it, and they have a convention, you know, official convention. But I think at some point they were talking to the organizers of this thing and saying, hey, you need to pay for, you know, a photo op event. You know, Disney doesn't really want you doing these things in the park if you're not paying for it. So
yeah, I mean, and that was, and I was reading, and they weren't just in the OC Register. There have been write-ups in Los Angeles Magazine, on Nerdist. And one of the things was you had to pay. So they were paying to get that photo op in front of the Haunted Mansion, you right. know, like on the steps. They were paying for that photo op to happen in front of the castle. And apparently they did one in front of the Sword in the Stone too. And that is not cheap.
That's expensive.
Everything at Disney is going to cost you, and it is not cheap. And for that amount of people, you can imagine they're going to quote you a lot, you know, a larger amount, because they're going to need a lot more, event people to cover that and to rope off the area and close that walkway.
Now, they did have a final photo event, but I think in talking to the people from Disney, they established that they couldn't block the walkways. They only had 5 minutes to take a photo with, 300 people. Like, they set some very clear ground rules if they didn't want to pay for it. And,
I mean, I will be honest. I was a little surprised that Disney was so accommodating and said, hey, we're going to give you 5 minutes. If you're not paying for any of it, we're going to get you 5 minutes to get your stuff together, to get everybody in, to get that photo, and to get out, you know? And I think
I was surprised as well. I was surprised they just didn't tell them straight out. No.
Yeah. And, I think that the organizers did a really clear job on the website of stating, like, hey, here's the deal. Like, this is exactly how it's going to happen. If you're not here, you're missing it. Do not expect to be in the front of this picture. You're going to get in where you're going to get in. They also said very clearly, do not block the walkways. If you block the walkways, we are going to get in trouble, you know? So
I think they went as far as they even had a drawing and a map.
They had a map. They had a drawing of where it was going to be, of where you could and couldn't. And they even told people on the website, like, do not come. You know, like, do not hang out in front of this until it is time. Don't just spend 30 minutes like lounging in front of the attraction while you wait for the photos. So, I mean, I think they did a really, really clear job of telling them what they could and couldn't do, you know, and it really seemed like they were trying to do their best to get this last photo done.
Now, I think also in an unrelated way, a lot of people in some of the Disney forums were, I mean, I had friends growing up I grew up in the 1990s, you know, I had friends that were really into the goth scene, and I know it's still really popular now, but I know there were still a lot of people that were questioning, some of the, let's call it the appropriateness of some of the outfits that they were wearing, because it ran the range, and, you know, everything from a Haunted Mansion dress to, you know, glorified BDSM, you know, wear and short skirts and
corset and a tutu,
that kind of stuff. So I think that was also part of the conversation. Here's what it sounds like to me. It sounds like it sounds like they weren't going to be able to write it off. I don't know that they were ever an established business though. So I don't know. I mean,
I don't think that they were either, but I think he was doing this as a personal write-off for something, which is basically right. where that tax loophole has really closed, because right. Suddenly business write-offs and tax write-offs for a person are going to be a lot harder than what they used to be. By. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about it. Can't write off my annual pass anymore. But, you know, but nobody gets paid to do this podcast. None of us are making any money off of this whatsoever. Sorry to, break the magic. But we don't make any money off of it. At best, I cover the costs, and it, costs me less than a couple $100 every year to do this podcast. And I think once it starts becoming a financial burden on someone, if you're not looking to start charging for things, and, it's real easy to just walk away.
Well, I think the other thing is what people don't realize, and from a peripheral view, you're just kind of like, oh, it's not a big deal, but it actually really is. Planning an event, especially the amount of events that they had going on and the logistics, it takes a lot of time.
Oh, renting ballrooms.
Not even just the renting of everything. Cause I know like a lot of the stuff, like they did the black market, which, was, in a portion of that money, or most of that money, I guess, was used to cover cost, not only of the black market itself, but also of hiring Disney staff to be able to get those photo ops. But the problem is, you also forget everybody's doing this as a volunteer. The crew were all volunteers, right? Like, the guy who started it, Noah, is a volunteer, for lack of a better way of saying it. So yes, this is something they're interested in, they're passionate about, but it takes a lot of time. If you've ever planned any event, like on a large scale, like your wedding, you know, this is a huge amount of time that gets sucked into it. From the smallest details of, you know, where is it going to be? How are we going to accommodate people? You know, how do we turn people away? How are we going to do the web maintaining? I mean, it's a huge chunk of time. And eventually, you know, people want to get paid for it, or they're just going to move on because they're going to get burned out and they're going to need a break.
Yeah. And I think that's exactly, sounds like, in conjunction with the financials, it sounds like they just needed to walk away from it. Like, it's a lot of work. Again, in relation to just this small podcast, I mean, this is just a small podcast. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to get people here. We only record every 2 weeks, and we do a vlog, you know, once every couple of months. And, you know,
it's a lot of hard work to go through a park and eat all that food, man.
But, Aaron, do you have any recollection of Bat's Day?
Literally never heard of it until right now.
Yeah. I'm impressed with Karen. Karen had never heard of it until yesterday, and she, I gave her homework was to Google Bat's Day.
I did. I homeworked the.
Yeah.
You know, I really did my homework.
Yeah, you did.
I've heard of Dapper Day. I've never actually gone or anything, but I know people who do like to go. And I honestly didn't even know that existed until I saw pictures of you guys going to that.
Dapper Day is fun, but again, there's a lot of confused looks at Dapper Day. And these are, you know, people just show up. You know, you're running everything from vintage 1950s and 60s wear to the guy that shows up with a vest and a fedora and, you know, the Halloween club. It runs a gamut, but there's a lot of really confused looks. And when the line for the Mark Twain gets to be 4 hours long, because, you know, it's the group meetup. They don't do the group meetups anymore. They don't do the group picture anymore. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work to keep these kind of events going. All right. Well, thank you for the discussion on Bat's Day. We're going to move on. We've got two more news stories before our dining review. This one involves SeaWorld, and they're debuting two new events, two new features of their summer entertainment this year. So SeaWorld San Diego will debut Electric Eel, San Diego's tallest and fastest roller coaster, with loops, twists, and airtime on May 10th, 2018. So about 2 weeks ago. Featuring multiple launch experiences, Electric Eel will propel riders forward and backward, as Electric Eel will bring a whole new level of excitement to SeaWorld, said SeaWorld San Diego's park president Marilyn Haynes. The new first-of-its-kind coaster at SeaWorld will give riders the rare opportunity to feel what it's like to move like an eel as they twist and flip along nearly 900 feet of track. Electric Eel joins Manta and Journey to Atlantis as the third coaster-type ride experience at SeaWorld San Diego. It is located on approximately a two-acre site on the eastern side of the park between Ocean Explorer and Journey to Atlantis. The new coaster is an expansion of the park's Ocean Explorer realm, which opened in summer 2017 as part of the park's largest new attraction premiere in its history. Alongside the nighttime Electric Ocean, which is a transformation of the park into a sea of glowing color inspired by the phenomenon of ocean bioluminescence. If you go to Florida, the bioluminescence is a big part of Pandora World. Electric Ocean is set to begin at SeaWorld on June 16th and will light up the park on select dates through September 2nd, 2018. So, Aaron, you're our resident coaster fan and expert. Have you been to SeaWorld? So anybody at the table been to SeaWorld in the last, I don't know, year or 2 years?
No.
All right. Karen?
Radio silence.
All right. So that seems to be kind of SeaWorld's problem.
But I did recently learn that apparently SeaWorld has some sort of program where, as a teacher, you get tickets or you get free entry, and it's for you and like two or three other people.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that on the show before. They're discount tickets or free tickets.
They're free tickets. I've recently learned they're free tickets, so I guess they, you know, the expectation is you go in for free, you know, you'll eat there and maybe buy a few souvenirs.
Yeah. Does the addition of these new coasters make anybody want to go to SeaWorld anymore?
Actually, it kind of does.
I do. I want to go because I haven't done like any of the coasters
do it, Aaron. Road trip.
Sure.
Yeah. Aaron's familiar with San Diego.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great. Group trip to SeaWorld. So, and if, I don't mean, they sound exciting. I think SeaWorld is definitely moving away from the animal exhibits and animal shows that defined them through the 70s and 80s. And I think they kind of have to after that whole blackfish scandal. I know Brandis is not here today, but she is definitely of the I won't go to SeaWorld type. I'm not there. I don't know. Does anybody else have an opposition to going to SeaWorld on a moral level?
No.
No.
I also never saw blackfish.
Yeah, but I never saw it either, but.
I don't even know what it is. I mean,
people still go to the circus, right? So.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, you're absolutely right. So I'd like to go to SeaWorld, at some point this summer. Summer's coming up. All right. So, if roller coasters don't do it for you, a new parade will float into SeaWorld this summer. SeaWorld San Diego will be the only place to see a Sesame Street themed parade in Southern California.
I'm also in for that, I'll be honest.
The Sesame Street Parade, a colorful musical show-stopping parade, will kick off at the San Diego Marine Park starting Saturday, May 5th. The parade, which is the only one of its kind in California, will feature 10 larger-than-life themed floats, including iconic Sesame Street favorites as Mr. Hooper's store and the Count's Castle. Ah, ah, ah. Elmo and his furry friends will join more than 20 dancers who will engage with guests during the highly energetic 20-minute experience. The parade will roll through SeaWorld this summer every Saturday and Sunday starting May 5th. The Sesame Street Party Parade includes a pair of interactive show stops, which include jumping rope, hula hooping, and dancing with their favorite Sesame Street character. The second stars Rosita. Anybody? Rosita? No? Mm-mm. All right. A favorite Sesame Street character. I will challenge that as fact. Who likes to play the guitar and is fluent in both English and Spanish. The parade is the latest Sesame Street addition to SeaWorld San Diego. The park's Sesame Street Bay of Play area is celebrating its 10th year in 2018, and we are beyond thrilled to bring this brand new, engaging, and endearing experience to visitors, especially those with young children and grandchildren, said Marilyn Haynes, president of SeaWorld San Diego. Our partnership with Sesame Street fits nicely with SeaWorld's mission to educate and entertain. SeaWorld is open 365 days a year and is located on SeaWorld Drive off of I-5. Park admission is $89.99 for ages 10 and older and $84.99 for ages 3 to 9.
I have to say, at $90 for the admission, I'm rethinking my I want to go to SeaWorld,
although,
just so you know.
That's why I don't think I've gone so long. I want to go. But
I did not realize SeaWorld was that expensive.
I was not expecting that, so I'm now rethinking this whole going. Yeah,
you pay like $20 more and you go into Disneyland, so.
Yeah, really.
Yeah,
without the drive. Price.
Or if you pay $50 a month, Studios you get your annual pass.
Also up there, actually.
Yeah, Universal Studios. Okay, so let's talk about that. So, I mean, I feel like Universal Studios and SeaWorld are both kind of on the same level in terms of things to do. So if you guys had to make a snap judgment, if you didn't have your annual pass, Aaron, SeaWorld, or if you had one day to go and you were here on vacation, SeaWorld San Diego or Universal Studios Hollywood.
I'd probably still do Universal because just for my love of movies
okay.
as well. And especially if like I've never gone before and you know, they have an actual backlot tour, you get to see that. And it's just kind of cool to, you know, I've done that so many times as well, but I still enjoy it. It's just kind of cool to see that.
Karen, if you had to pick one, which one would you pick?
I think this can be a toughie. I mean, while I would really love to see what's going on at SeaWorld and to see how it's changed or hasn't changed and what's there now, you know, maybe spend a little time hanging out in San Diego, I think I would still have to pick Universal because Universal's got Harry Potter. And I know, you know,
Sesame Street has SeaWorld has Rosita.
And the problem is, I don't really know Rosita, and I'm like, oh, Sesame Street is cool, but it's not really something that I'm like, oh, I want to buy a lot of stuff for. And I'm kind of a shopaholic. Chris is nodding his head. Mm-hmm. I am kind of a shopaholic. I like to buy things, and I like to eat things. And I have been to like the Harry Potter Wizarding World section of Universal. And I really enjoyed eating at, was it the Three Broomsticks? Mm-hmm. So I enjoyed eating at the Three Broomsticks and I like looking at all the things that are too expensive for me to buy. And I think, you know, overall I would just pick that instead.
All right. I think I would pick, you know, probably pick Universal Studios as well, but I have not been to SeaWorld in probably close to 10 or 15 years. It's been a really long time. And especially since they've been adding more attraction based stuff, I still think we should make a trip and go.
I would definitely be in if we could get like a discount on tickets.
I think we can.
Like maybe they offer like a AAA discount.
I think they do. And I, without revealing too much, I work in education, so I might be able to get a free couple of tickets. So we'll see how that goes. All right. And then finally, there are several endings coming to the Disneyland Resort. The first one, Hyperspace Mountain, the popular Star Wars-themed overlay of Space Mountain, will be going away after June 3rd. According to Oh My Disney, the transformation from Hyperspace Mountain to Space Mountain takes just about an hour, so the classic attraction could return as early as June 4th. According to Imagineer Brent Strong, we've got that down to a science. Also noted was the end of the March of the First Order through Tomorrowland, and thank goodness for that, which will come to an end on May 31st. Both of the special experiences debuted at Disneyland Park in celebration of May the 4th, as in May the 4th be with you. Classic
and
Space
also with you.
Classic Space Mountain should remain in place until early September, when it is expected to close for a day or two to make way for the Space Mountain Ghost Galaxy overlay, where when Halloween time begins on September 7th. Also, according to www.info.com, based on available reservations and the last day, based on available reservations, the last day of business for ESPN Zone is going to be June 2nd. The calendar and hours posted on the official Disneyland website show that the Western Starbucks location, Earl of Sandwich, Rainforest Cafe, and Alamo Rent-A-Car will close down June the 17th. All of these had been previously announced as closing down June the 30th, at the end of the month, so it sounds like they're going to be going away just a little bit sooner. A closing date for the AMC 12 theaters is yet to be announced. AMC theaters will be opening up a new location across Harbor Boulevard at the Anaheim Garden Walk. However, no relocation plans have yet been announced for the other businesses that will be closing on the site of a yet to be named Five Diamond Hotel. So, first of all, Hyperspace Mountain. Anybody care?
No. I've never actually done it. I've done the Ghost Galaxy overlay and there's, in my opinion, there's nothing special about it. I was only like when one of my friends, since I worked in the theme park industry, one of my friends told me how much budget they had to like make Ghost Galaxy. It's impressive when you hear that. The figures, I was like, wow, it was like less than $1 million was their budget. They had to do something. And they're like, so that's impressive. But then at the same time, you're like, I can tell that this is.
I will say I have done Hyperspace Mountain before.
How Space Mountain is on its own.
Hyperspace Mountain was a lot of fun. The way that they integrated the music with the twists and the turns of the ride was actually really cool. Like it actually made you feel like you were in an X-Wing, you know. Now whether or not that belongs in Tomorrowland at Disneyland is kind of up for debate. And when I hear classic Space Mountain, in quotations, classic Space Mountain, I think of the original Space Mountain, like the Dick Dale soundtrack, the surf guitar. But I have a feeling they're going to be returning it to kind of the second generation, which is the guy that did the theme for The Incredibles and that soundtrack.
So
I like that soundtrack too, though.
I miss the very original Space Mountain, which I think was the best. I have been on all of the Space Mountains. I'll be honest, I didn't really think Hyperspace Mountain was any big woo. And I kind of just thought it was being tested out until they opened Star Wars Land and everything would just move to Star Wars Land.
I think that's pretty much the thing too.
My thinking was like, oh, they're just, you know, it's keeping it in your brain. Like, hey.
And then when
Star Wars Land opens, you're just going to be like, oh, guess what? All your favorites are here.
Star Wars. You guys remember Star Wars, right? You guys like Star Wars? We have a thing. We have Star Wars. but this says it debuted for May the 4th, but I mean, it's actually been running like for several years now. They had the Star Wars celebration or whatever it was in Tomorrowland. And I've never even seen, I've seen the March of the First Order in Florida at the Hollywood Studios there, but I've never seen the March of the First Order in Tomorrowland at Disneyland. And I know that they've changed the theme. It's a Galactic Grill is the Tomorrowland Terrace. And I don't know. Just doesn't seem.
Is that the show where the kids go and they fight the bad people?
That's the temple trials, Jedi temple.
Okay. And yeah. That 'cause I've never seen the march.
Yeah. No. This is literally like they parade, you know.
They just literally walk.
Captain Phasma and a few stormtroopers.
And then they
around.
Walk back.
Yep.
Okay.
That's exactly
what it is.
I saw a little bit of the one from in Florida when I was there. And
I feel like I'm not missing out on much then.
It was literally just them in costume walking out and everyone's just, you know, with their phones out, just recording or taking pictures, yeah, it's which is nothing special.
So,
and then they just go away. And then it's just music. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, you're a Star Wars fan, and you even said you don't really
care.
So
I really,
that's saying a lot.
I love Star Wars, and I'm like, eh.
So I guess for me, the bigger question is, when they were rolling all this out for May the 4th, was there any food specials? Because they usually roll out food specials to go along with all of this stuff.
When they debuted this new, the Star Wars Celebration, or, you know, we do a theme park podcast and I can't recall the name of it. But, when they rolled out the original, they rethemed the Tomorrowland Terrace to the Galactic Grill.
And I have eaten there. And I do remember that.
So they do have, special things, by special things, they have it's a burger that they've renamed the Darth Vader burger.
Well, because, you know, like when they did that Toy Story celebration, mm-hmm. they had like little macarons that were like the shape of the aliens. There were a lot more specialty themed.
The only one that I recall them doing was they did a red churro and a blue churro.
Yeah.
I had those. They were really sweet.
Yeah.
They look like it.
So that was, the Instagrammable food. So they did do that, but they did do a popcorn bucket.
Went churro crazy though. I mean,
yeah.
I think you jump the shark when you have rose gold churros.
You know, they have a churro map you can do now.
In Shanghai, it was really cool. Challenge.
Yes.
In Tokyo, the churros are shaped like Mickey ears. So they're really cute and adorable. And those are Instagrammable.
In Japan, the hamburgers are shaped like Mickey.
In Japan, everything Tokyo, Japan. Everything in Tokyo.
I went crazy shopping there. Like, seriously, I bought like everything.
So, yeah, but other than that, I mean, they had like a couple of like a Darth Vader popcorn bucket and I think a Stormtrooper popcorn bucket. And I think maybe they had, I don't know, it's maybe making things up here, but I think they had a popcorn bucket in the shape of the Millennium Falcon. But other than that, they didn't really do anything. I think they're just kind of trying to, I know based on conversations that I've had with people that they're going to be reimagining Tomorrowland once Star Wars Land is open for a couple of years. Tomorrowland is the new big project that they're going to be working on. So we'll see, you know, where that leads them. But I think they're going to start phasing out a lot of the Star Wars things in Tomorrowland because they've got a whole land open.
They've got to build up that, you know, want and the missing of it.
Yeah.
But also would now be an inappropriate time to say that for our popcorn buckets, they should really also learn from Tokyo because it would be really cool if we had some really cool popcorn buckets and maybe different flavored popcorn like they have over there instead of just one ridiculously gigantically large popcorn bucket that is hard to store and I have no use for after I leave Disneyland.
Right. So that's going to do it for park hopping. Just one final, you know, I'm going to miss, I don't know how you guys feel. How do you guys feel about the things closing at Downtown Disney? Like, are you going to miss any of that stuff?
ESPN Zone? I'll be honest. I'm going to miss ESPN Zone.
I'm going to miss Earl of Sandwich just because it was so convenient to get.
And it was like
the cheapest thing to get there. And it still tasted pretty good. In my opinion, like,
that's
it was cheap and it was good and it was easy to like get something and then go back into the park. Cause there's, you know, the monorail station is right on that area as well.
Right. Yeah.
So it was very convenient.
I was just down there. They don't know. I was talking to one of the monorail cast members and they don't know if that station's going to shut down or if they're going to run one way trips, you know, back and forth. That whole station's going to be inside the new hotel. I'm going to miss ESPN Zone. I mean, we just took my dining review. We just went to Rainforest Cafe.
I'm going to miss that too, I'll be honest.
It was very nostalgic. You know, it was very nostalgic because me and Karen worked at the resort before any of that stuff was there. And so we kind of saw like Downtown Disney and all these things kind of open and things that are
Saw the
changing.
Mad crowds.
Yeah.
Saw the amazed faces of all the kids who were like when it rained, you know, and it thundered.
I was impressed by that.
I still remember the ridiculous lines at ESPN, especially for like the bathrooms where all the guys had TV.
That's right. Yeah, they have the TVs in the men's room. I remember them doing like live broadcasts from ESPN Zone.
Yeah.
You know, they used to do
the fight for the recliners at the front of the big screen, which are gone, for the sporting events,
which have gone.
That was sad.
I will say this though. One of the worst, I said it before, one of the worst sports bar viewing experiences I ever had was at the ESPN Zone. And it was
the beer cheese soup, man.
It was just, it was a terrible place to watch a game.
The beer cheese soup.
Yeah. They used to do, like the post game shows. They used to have a stage in the studio where they would do them from, you know, live from the ESPN Zone at Downtown Disney. But you know, walking up there and you'll see, I'm going to put a video up soon. You know, half the games are gone.
It's really empty
in there.
It's
really sad. They haven't had the rock wall for God knows how long up there. It's just, you know, I've always said they needed to do something with it. I just didn't know that something was going to be to take it down with a bulldozer.
Well, Aaron and I were also just talking. The food, unfortunately, also, you know, really went downhill.
Yeah, they changed the menu out and it just wasn't, you know. So we'll see. We'll see what they put in the new hotel.
I'll be honest though, I'm very excited about a new hotel.
I am as well.
I'm very, very excited about this. I don't know if it's because we have hospitality backgrounds, but you know, I'm very excited to see what the new hotel is going to be like, what food options, what the rooms are going to be like. I would love to stay there for a night, you know, and just, well, and I'm very excited.
We've talked about it before. It's kind of the circle of life with this thing. So before Downtown Disney was open was the old original Disneyland hotel that they had, you know, converted to the bungalows, but that was where the original Disneyland hotel was and the Olympic sized swimming pool. And when they announced the expansion in Downtown Disney, all of that went goodbye. That got all torn under. The original Disneyland hotel is no more from the 1950s. So then they built Downtown Disney, and now they're tearing Downtown Disney down to build up a new hotel. So it's kind of this, you know, circle of life. All right. So again, it's time for our dining review. This is our very first dining review ever. And so for our dining review, speaking of things that are going away, I went with my wife and my mom. We went to the Rainforest Cafe, and we went the day before Mother's Day because we celebrated Mother's Day twice. We took my mom out to an exhibit that she wanted to see, and then we decided instead of just going home or going to Taco Bell or whatever, that we would go somewhere special. So we realized that Rainforest Cafe was going to be closing down soon, and we went and we had dinner there. And so I'm going to give you just a little bit of background on the Rainforest Cafe. Now, the Rainforest Cafe is a themed restaurant chain owned by Landry's Incorporated of Houston. It was founded by Stephen Schlosser, and the first location opened in the Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota on February 3, 1994. By 1997, the chain consisted of six restaurants all in the United States. The first international location opened in London in June 1997, and in 1998, it was planned to build up 12 additional restaurants in the United States, seven in Mexico, and five in the UK, for a total of 22 restaurants worldwide by 2008. In 2000, the Rainforest Cafe was bought by Landry's Restaurants Incorporated, a company specializing in dining, hospitality, entertainment, and gaming based in Houston, Texas. Currently, the company owns restaurants in the United States, Canada, France, the United Kingdom, the UAE, Japan, and India. The two locations in Mexico closed about 2 or 3 years ago. Rainforest Cafe focuses on local tourism for a majority of their income. Do you guys ever go to a Hard Rock Cafe?
I have.
I've been to one. Yeah. I went to the one. I've been to the one in Hollywood.
So
a few other places.
Now that I'm thinking about it.
I've been to a few international ones as well.
Yeah. So now
that I'm in Barcelona.
It was the thing when we were younger, you had to go and like get a shot glass or something from, you know, a different location.
Rock. Yeah. So that reminds, now that I'm thinking about it, it reminds me a lot of the Hard Rock Cafe. The location everywhere, and you get your souvenir from there. So rainforest-themed merchandise is sold in the gift shop, mostly printed by the Atlanta-based fashion apparel company Boxercraft. Toys, including stuffed toys and action figures of the restaurant mascots, are sold as well. Rainforest Cafe also has a set of mascots called the Wild Bunch. Do you guys know that their mascots have names?
I did not know that they even had mascots. I will be honest, I just remember the parrot.
Okay, so full disclosure.
I remember the frog.
Full disclosure, I worked for when it first opened, I worked for Rainforest Cafe for about 6 months in their retail store.
I have a Rainforest Cafe umbrella that has frogs printed all over it. And now that Aaron said one of their mascots was a frog, it makes so much more sense to me now.
I have a Rainforest Cafe name tag somewhere.
Fancy. All right.
So the characters are Cha-Cha, the red-eyed tree frog, Iggy the iguana, Nile the crocodile, Rio, a macaw, Maya the jaguar, Tuki the elephant, Bamba the gorilla, Ozzy the orangutan, and all of that is giving me just wicked flashbacks.
That is a lot of... Because we had to
know all that stuff.
Those are a lot of mascots that I never knew they had.
Right. I mean, if you look on their merchandise, these characters are all of their merchandise. Most people just don't know that they have names. The eight characters are represented on children's menus, merchandise, and the company logo. Nearly all locations have animatronic elephants, tigers, gorillas, jaguars, snakes, and crocodiles. Elephants are typically found in a pair consisting of an adult and young elephant. Gorillas are the most numerous of the animatronics, and there are usually four or five gorillas in each restaurant. Each group usually has a silverback, a baby hanging from a tree, and one or two other gorillas, which are sometimes leaning on palm trees, which they shake during their motion sequence. They have a thunderstorm, a rainstorm that comes by, and when the rainstorm comes by, they shake the trees, and the elephants move, and they make sounds.
The sky darkens. It's very cool, actually. Lightning. It is very, very extremely cool.
Lightning and thunder.
Lightning and thunder goes off. I will say this, when we went, they have turned down the volume. It's been at least 10 years since I've been inside a Rainforest Cafe, and they have turned down the volume significantly since
I remember
I was
those were
there.
Loud.
Yeah.
It used to remind me of eating, like, at a scarier version of the Tiki Room.
Yeah, absolutely. I think yeah, you used to not be able to talk over the rainstorm, and we had a full-on conversation while that was going on, and it went off several times during our meal. So they've turned it down significantly.
Was there a line when you went?
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Oh, okay.
Jaguars may not be found at every location, but they are generally perched on a high ledge or tree with their tail on and one forelimb hanging down like jaguars do. Snakes are mostly positioned at the entrance of the retail village where they are wrapped around a branch, greeting guests from above. And if you look up when you walk into the location at Downtown Disney, that is the case. Crocodiles are located in a wishing pond or waterfall, either outside or just inside the shop, where guests are invited to toss coins at them. At the Opry Mills location, there is a hippopotamus in place of a crocodile, and each location usually has multiple butterflies, which have animatronic flapping wings as well.
Quick FYI, when we are there on Monday,
I
am totally going to be looking for all of these things.
All right. Right now you'll know their characters' names too. You're gonna go.
I'm gonna have a little cheat sheet, and I'm gonna be like, it's gonna be like a scavenger hunt, and I'm gonna be like, all right, we need to go to Retail Village and look for the snake.
We should totally do that. So the description of these animatronic animals is not the case at every location, and they will vary slightly to dramatically by the individual restaurant. For example, the Rainforest Cafe in Disney Springs, Florida, has a family of four jaguars on a high ledge, as well as the more typical jaguar in the gift shop. Dates and locations. So there were, at one point, three rainforest locations at Disney parks and four locations in California. When the Rainforest Cafe closes at Downtown Disney in less than a month, it will leave two locations at Disney parks and only one restaurant operating in California. So the location with the Disney parks and their history, there is a location in Lake Buena Vista, Florida at Disney Springs, formerly Downtown Disney, which opened on August 6th, 1996, which has about 450 seats. Aaron, can you name the other location in Walt Disney World? This one took me a while and I completely forgotten about it.
There's another Rainforest Cafe?
There is another Rainforest Cafe.
I honestly have no idea.
Disney's Animal Kingdom entrance at Walt Disney World Resort opened on April 22nd, 1998.
I don't think I've ever really paid attention to that. Yeah. I knew that.
Why didn't anybody ask me?
Karen, do you know where the second location is at Walt Disney World?
I do know. I've actually eaten there.
Oh, where is it at?
It's at the entrance of the Animal Kingdom.
Where is the entrance?
Okay, so if you're walking, literally, if you're walking towards the entrance of Animal Kingdom, you know where the Christmas tree usually is?
Yes.
Okay. Right in the front. So if you walk just past where the Christmas tree is and you look over to your left facing the entrance, it is literally in a corner of the entrance.
But for the record, it still has the very large yellow sign that says Rainforest Cafe.
Yeah. It's if you're not looking for it though, it's really easy to miss. Yeah. If you're not like, definitely. I need to eat at a Rainforest Cafe.
There.
Yeah. And the one
it will sometimes stay open later than the park too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure it does. And the entrance to it is actually located outside the park. So you don't have to go in.
You walk through this bushy pathway to get in.
Again, next time you're there, check it out. You're like, oh, that's where it is. And
yeah,
and
it'll probably like be so obvious now to me. I'm like, oh, why have I never seen that?
And the one in Anaheim, California, opened at Downtown Disney at the Disneyland Resort on January 12th, 2001, and will close at the end of June, or actually now mid-June in 2018. So the other California locations, does anybody know where the other
I know. South Coast Plaza.
Karen, yes. So the one in South Coast Plaza opened June 9th, 1997 and closed in 2013. That one was always weird to me.
No, it was
so
great.
So South Coast Plaza is a local mall in Orange County.
It was great because, so in case you guys didn't already get this, Karen really likes to shop. So Karen goes to South Coast Plaza a lot. And South Coast Plaza has a whole bunch of, name brand stores, a lot of the luxury goods. And so a lot of times when I had relatives or, you know, coworkers or family or friends or whatever coming from out of the country, they would want to buy, luxury goods because it was usually cheaper here in the States than it was back in Asia. So we would take them to the mall, and the Rainforest Cafe would be a great place to have lunch because, you know, it was so kitschy, right? And it's not something that was really seen outside of the country. And so we would bring them in and we wouldn't tell them about the rainstorms or anything. And so we would explain to them. And so they would pick like their real American food. And then all of a sudden you would hear this like, oh my God, as the storm started going. So it was great fun.
Which it always like, because South Coast Plaza, for those of you that aren't familiar, it's like, it's a Uso Fancy Mall. It's a really like high end shopping area. Although that the Rainforest Cafe and the McDonald's were located on the end of the mall.
Where the Sears was.
So it's like that whole end of the mall, which all of those things are now gone. So the Sears is gone, the Rainforest Cafe is gone, and the McDonald's is now, all those things are just gone.
It's just turned into a fancier corner of the mall now.
It's a different, very different. Okay. So that was the one. And so that one closed in 2013. Does anybody know where the other two locations are, including the one that's still open?
No.
Okay. So San Francisco, California, Fisherman's Wharf opened in May 2000, closed in October 2017. And the one that will remain open is at the Ontario Mills Mall in Ontario, California, which it opened on November 14th, 1996 and is still in operation today. I guess Downtown Disney is still in operation for the next, you know, 18 days. So, okay. So let's get on to our review. We went the Saturday before Mother's Day and we took out my mom because we decided to have just a little bit fancier dinner. And when I used to work at the park, I used to take my family there because we got a cast member discount. And we just thought it'd be really neat and kind of nostalgic to have dinner there one last time. So again, being the Saturday before Mother's Day, we were expecting the worst. We were expecting a really long wait, but we were kind of okay with that because we knew, and we were driving from downtown Los Angeles to Anaheim and we had nothing planned. So we're like, let's just go. But as it turns out, we just were a walk-up, no reservation, on the Saturday before Mother's Day, 20-minute wait.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah, she says it was a 30-minute wait. It actually ended up being a 20-minute wait. My wife actually went to go make a purchase, and we had already been called by the time that by the time she got back, we were just waiting for her to come in. So, and it's not like it wasn't busy. When we got there, that place was packed. They had all three levels and the outside terrace open. And it was a very, very busy, but the wait was very, very manageable. I remember years ago, you could wait. I mean, I'm sure you still can at this point. You could wait up to like an hour or two for tables, if there were large groups. However, when we went up there, so my mom uses a walker, and so they called us up to our table, which was great. We went up the elevator. They weren't really prepared for somebody with a walker, which I feel like that they should have probably told the people up there. So we actually ended up having to wait another 5 or 10 minutes for a table that we could put the walker in the corner and not kind of block the walkway. The good news was after about 5 minutes, they found a table for us and they were actually pretty nice about it. They just kind of had us wait in the corner, didn't make us go back down. They got us a great table and it was fine. There are three levels at the Downtown Disney location: the Aztec, which is the bottom level, the Terrace, which has the outdoor patio, and the Mayan, which is the third floor dining room. So here is where I was a little bit shocked. If you are an annual pass holder, your discount is only good on breakfast and lunch.
Oh.
Ever. And if you're a cast member, your discount is only good on weekday breakfast.
Whoa.
That's very specific. That's very specific. And
I can really see them pushing this breakfast here.
We figured the reason why when this place first opened, people were getting a lot of, servers that were stiffed on tips because cast members didn't know how to budget. You know, they would go in for their discount at peak times. And so I think they finally just put a stop to all of that. So on to what we ordered. So we started out with the spinach and artichoke dip, which came in at $12.99. This was probably our only not great experience at the restaurant. The spinach and artichoke dip was great. I was shooting some video for our vlog. And so I got up and I was gone for a good like 10 or 15 minutes. And our sodas had arrived, our drinks had arrived, and we were kind of waiting around. And I noticed that our appetizer hadn't arrived, and we were splitting an appetizer between three people. And it had been a good 10 or 15 minutes. And it's not like, you know, I was only gone for a few minutes. So I flagged down a manager, and the manager was very nice. And I said, listen, we haven't gotten our appetizer yet. Can you ask him if you can you please check on that? And because I'm a big believer in if you get the service that you get the service you ask for. If you don't call things to their attention and they don't know, you could sit and stew about it or you could say something about it. So we said something about it and he was great. He went out, he brought it out to us. We enjoyed it and it was very, very good. We actually enjoyed it quite a bit and it was gone because we were starving. We'd just come from downtown LA and that's a good 45 minute drive and we were ready for dinner and it was very good. What happened though is we joked, well, what if we hadn't said anything? If we hadn't said anything, would our appetizer just show up with our food? And as it turns out, after our food came, about 5 minutes after our dinner came, the server brought out another appetizer.
Did you get to eat it for free?
We didn't. She walked away. She's like, oh, somebody already brought you your dip and walked away. So that was kind of the only negative experience that we had. She was a very nice server, but she seemed very busy and they had a lot of like the runners and stuff coming in checking our drinks. I think we only saw her maybe twice in the whole evening that we were there. And again, she brought it out. She said, oh, they already brought you your stuff. And she walked away again. So again, that was the only really, really negative portion of it. And it wasn't even that negative. So our main dishes showed up. And so what we had was we had the pastelaya, which is a spicy dish. It's a shrimp, sautéed chicken, bell peppers, onions, tomatoes, andouille sausage, hot and spicy Cajun sauce, linguine, and it may be served with a Caribbean rice instead. This was $23.99, and the waitress recommended it. She said it was one of her favorite items. It was actually really, really good. Rainforest Cafe is not inexpensive, but the portion sizes that they give are fairly large. We were really stuffed. If we hadn't been as hungry as we were, we probably would have taken a lot of food home afterwards, but we were really, really hungry. So this was really good. The pasta was cooked well. The food was, she said it was spicy, but it wasn't too spicy. And it was full of sausage and it was full of shrimp and it was full of peppers. And again, really good. Maybe a little bit overpriced. You know, I think if a discount had been applied, it probably would have brought it price back down a little bit to earth. But I was satisfied with it.
When you say overpriced, are you saying overpriced in general or overpriced even for a theme park?
I think I'm saying overpriced in general. It's probably pretty much in line with what you would expect at a theme park. Maybe a little bit, probably inside of, you know, if you're going inside the park to go eat at the Blue Bayou or something, the prices are kind of in line with those. We also ordered the coconut fried shrimp, which comes with coleslaw, mango sauce, a choice of a side. Now, here's the other thing, too, is that everything on the menu, when I went back and was trying to find what we ordered, says you get a choice. Some of these things say you get a choice of a side. We were not offered a choice of a side. We were just given the side, and that was it. So we just got french fries with it, and the coconut fried shrimp was also $23.99. Again, it was good. There was a lot of it. My mom actually boxed up her portion and took it home with her because it was just a lot of food. The shrimp, the breading was really good. The flavor was really good. Was it worth $23.99? Yeah, probably at that moment, but I don't know if I was not at a Rainforest Cafe, if I would pay $23.99 for that particular dish. I don't recall the name of the last dish that we ordered. And this was just one more one more thing that we're like, okay, that's kind of weird. We ordered that a different kind of a fresh menu that they're doing. We ordered the Bollywood chicken and shrimp, which came on a bed of rice with a curry sauce and seasonal vegetables. My wife has a particular food allergy, and so we asked to make sure that there wasn't any of this particular vegetable in the dish, and we asked what the seasonal vegetables were. The server said, oh, it comes with the seasoned Italian zucchini. That wasn't what we got. When we got the dish, we got the dish with broccoli, which is not allergic to, so that's fine. But just again, it was just something that we asked, and they gave us one answer, and then what we got was something totally different. This was the most expensive dish that we had, and it was $25.99. Again, though, really good. It was the curry was delicious. There was plenty of it. It was a big portion, so $25.99. Maybe not at another restaurant, but at a Disney park at a sit down restaurant, it's probably really, it's reasonable enough, I suppose. It's not any worse than you're going to do inside the park and like a Blue Bayou or something like that. So, and to recap, the food was great. The portions were good, and there was enough that we took home some of it with us. The service was great, good, but not great. The server was friendly enough, but I mean, she did miss a couple of things. She didn't know what the seasonal vegetable was. The busser refilled our drinks and cleared most of our plates, although we had stacks of plates left on the table at the end. So, we're going to go around the table. And so we had three drinks, no alcohol, three entrees and an appetizer. Karen, what do you think that the total came to?
Well, I just want to step back for a moment. Sure. Because I have worked in the food industry. So I am wondering if not maybe the server didn't know what the seasonal vegetable was, but rather that the seasonal vegetable ran out.
Maybe. That's possible.
Or that the kitchen, you know, like decided to make the substitution without letting them know, especially because they had a 20-minute wait and you've got all three levels open and going. Sometimes, you know, the kitchen just decides to go ahead and just substitute something, and, you know, or that they've run out of something and they're not letting the servers know. So, you know, just a little food for thought that, you know.
Yeah, we weren't upset, and that we were not upset about it, like in it by any stretch of the imagination.
No, I mean, everybody's, I'm sure nobody's upset, but I just, you know, I feel like people should know, like in the industry, in, you know, like at a restaurant, you're not always, you know, it's not always the server. Unfortunately, the server is kind of like your messenger.
They take the,
you know,
the
blame. They're going to take the brunt of it because they're the ones that you associate with it. But I mean, if you had a mishap with your meal, it could very well have come from the kitchen.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. I mean, I've spent time in the food industry as well. So again, that's because we weren't upset by it. We were still really happy with the food, really happy with the dish. But it was just small little things like that.
Aaron? Yeah. But I guess about $100.
Okay. Aaron?
Definitely over 100. 125. Let's go there.
Actually, Karen wins because Aaron went over by 66 cents.
Woo!
Man.
Bum, 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 bum.
Woohoo!
So, Karen wins the showcase showdown. So total with tip for three people, no alcohol came to $124.44.
Just imagine if you paid for alcohol.
Oh yeah. Well, we didn't do
That's
dessert.
That's really pricey.
We didn't do dessert because I didn't do the volcano. Brownie sundae thing.
Yeah, which is gigantic. We stopped ridiculous. Doing that like, years delicious. Ago. We stopped doing that years ago because
it's so much food.
Well, A, it's a lot of chocolate brownie, but B, I think it's specific to the downtown Disney location.
Oh,
so the volcano used to come with an actual sparkler.
Yes. It did. And you would march through and you would see the sparkles and people would get excited and other tables would want to order it because, you know, it's fancy smancy coming through with a sparkler.
So they no longer do the sparkler.
Oh, it's no.
I have a feeling somebody may have touched the sparkler. I don't know what happened, but years ago, I mean, this is back to like I said, 10 years ago, the last time I was at a Rainforest Cafe. it's just a piece of like, it's a Mylar, like kind of the, like the centerpiece things that you buy at Party City.
Oh, yeah, that's really, cool. It's really, not cool.
It's really,
use your
really,
imagination.
It's really, really sad. And so like half of the excitement of ordering the volcano, cause they come through and they shout volcano.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And there was fire
and there was fire and it was a sparkler and it was exciting. Yeah. Not, no, it just really, it's just kind of the sad little like centerpiece Mylar thing that's in the center. So,
that's so sad.
But yeah. So $124 for three people is not, I mean, and the drinks are not inexpensive. We thought about getting a drink and
those were like $12+.
$12-$13 yeah. for a drink. I thought about getting a drink with a souvenir cup because it says Anaheim.
Whoa.
On it, you know.
And it comes with like a glow in the dark, ice cube.
Yeah.
Ice cube.
You're paying for the cube.
Yep.
So
I could probably find you that cube from China. Just saying.
I'm sure. Yeah. Well, we'd have so many of those at home. So again, $124, especially definitely this was a place for a special occasion. This is not a place that I would go to, you know, willingly.
Every time.
Every time yeah. I go down to the park.
Not that you can anymore anyways, well, yeah. but.
Yeah. Well, in 18 days.
You had that option. Yeah.
So, what are you guys' experience? We talked a little bit about that at Rainforest Cafe. Anybody going to miss Rainforest Cafe?
I honestly haven't been to Rainforest Cafe in almost 10 years. The last time I went was.
That's about the last time I was
there. The last time I was there was for my friend's 21st birthday, so we can get her first legal drink at Rainforest Cafe, because we went to Disneyland for the day. And then at like 5 o'clock, we're like, yes, we are going to Rainforest. Cause she's like, I want a pretty drink, as you know, as you do. And we went to Rainforest Cafe and, you know, got some Mai Tais or something and went back to the park and felt great. But I haven't eaten at the restaurant in probably at least 15 years. So it's been so long, but as a kid, there was one in, because I grew up not in California for some of my life, and they had a Rainforest Cafe that opened at one of the malls there. And
what
that
was that? What
it
was
Grapevine Mills Mall in Texas. Huh. And it was like this gigantic mall that was all about kind of like theming and stuff. And so they had the Eerie World Cafe and they had the Rainforest Cafe here. And my brother and I loved both of those places. Like, it was like going to a theme park without being in a theme park.
Eerie World Cafe after, because I want to hear all about it.
Yeah. The Eerie World Cafe still exists in New York over by, like Broadway area.
I'm going to have to look for this when I'm over there in a few months.
So much fun.
So yeah. I will say this. So in the 10 years that I've been there, their food has improved tremendously. It has improved a lot. I remember it used to be just kind of standard, like almost, I don't know, like Coco's level food.
Yeah, it was just like burgers and stuff when it first opened.
Yeah, so the fact that they had this, you know, this curry dish, and they had, I mean, the coconut shrimp has always been there.
I will say the curry dish surprised me. I was like, what?
They had a lot of like fish dishes. They had this special, like I said, this special menu that they were serving off of. But the food quality was impressive. Again, we were really full. You know, we left really happy. Small, minor mishaps and those kind of things happen. Certainly better than ESPN Zone. I'm going to miss it from a nostalgic point of view. I don't know if I'm going to miss it from like an eating point of view. It was just always fun. It was like getting to go to a theme park and not having to go to a theme park. They had, they have the creepy talking tree in the retail section.
Yes.
It was just a fun place to go on a special occasion.
Right.
Yeah. All right. If we are done with the Rainforest Cafe, it's time to move on to corrections and retractions. So I have a couple of corrections to make from our last show. The last show, I wasn't sure when the individual tickets totally went away at Disneyland. I said 1984, but the phrase e-ticket ride refers to the admission ticket system used at Disneyland and the Magic Kingdom theme parks before 1982. So in 1982, the Junior Deluxe 15 ticket book, which included admission and 15 attractions, for ages 12 through 17. Take a wild guess, 1982, 15 tickets, Karen.
$10. Wait, it's Disney. 15.
No, 1982.
Oh, sorry. $45.
So 1982, you could get 15 tickets and admission. Aaron, take a wild guess.
Probably
20. $7.25.
Oh my goodness.
I was suckered by Chris. 12. I should have stuck with my original answer.
My parents probably paid like 25 cents when they went.
So those for ages 12 through 17. In 1982, the ticket book for ages 3 to 11 was $7.50. So at some point in 1982, unlimited passports replaced the old A through E ticket systems at Disneyland. Take a wild guess, 1982, all admission to Disneyland for one adult passport. Karen.
$45.
Aaron.
Well, since you said the kids was only $7.50, I'm going to say that... 15 now.
So for adults, almost. So Karen wins this round. I'm sorry, Aaron wins this round. Passport for adults in 1982 was $12.
That's so depressing.
Isn't it though?
Wow.
So hang on.
This is how inflation works, everyone.
So you could go to Disneyland and you could go to Thrifty's for an ice cream.
So talk
amongst were the good old days.
Talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to look up the CPI Consumer Price Index Inflation Calculator. Talk amongst yourselves.
Yeah.
All right. So, tell me about this Erie Cafe.
The Erie World Cafe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or I think maybe it's just called the Erie Cafe.
Is it like Erie Canal Erie or like scary Erie?
Like scary Erie. Like things are not quite what they seem. It's kind of like the Haunted Mansion in terms of like it's like kind of both like spooky but like fun spooky. Uh-huh. And I mean the one in New York City is very different from the one that was in Texas in terms of, like the one in Texas was more trying to be like Rainforest Cafe, where it had animatronics in different areas and they had like an alien that would talk to you and things like that.
All right, so adjusted for inflation, a $12 admission to Disneyland for an adult in 1982 was $32.
I was closer.
You've been closer the second time. So, all right. And finally, our last correction and retraction. I referred to the castle in the Harry Potter series as Hogsmeade.
Oh, what did you, Chris, what did you just do?
It is Hogwarts. Hogwarts.
Hogsmeade is the place.
Hogsmeade is the village where they go to.
Where the three broomsticks
is. Where the three broomsticks is located. Hogwarts is the actual castle. So
I am now distancing myself from you before the backlash hits.
I'm sure it already happened.
Send angry emails too. So, all right, guys. Well, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be debuting. We're going to have a blog site going up, and we'll let you know when that is up. It's going to be the vacationlandpodcast.com is going to be going up. So we will post that when it happens. Other than that, I think that's going to do it for us today. You can connect with Vacationland online by visiting our Facebook page, facebook.com/vacationlandpodcast, Instagram @VLpodcast, our Twitter @vacationlandshow. And you can always email us vacationlandpodcast@gmail.com. I'd like to thank everyone for joining us today. I'd like to thank you, Karen, for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
And Aaron, thank you for joining us as always.
Thank you as well.
My name is Chris Ramirez. I am the host and executive producer, and I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you for listening out there, and we hope you've enjoyed the rest of your stay in Vacation Land. See you in 2 weeks.